This is one of those nights. There are so many things to talk about. Bill and I could do a 5-hour show tonight. Bill, yes, can't wait to, I can't wait to talk to you about Barry. Like, honestly, that's one thing. I think if there's anybody out there that has more Barry Sanders stories than you, please tell me who it is, because I think people forget how long you were with the franchise and what a special, special player Barry Sanders was. There's no doubt about that. And his legend seems to grow nationally by the year. It really does. It seems we'll get into that. We'll get into what happened at the end of the Michigan State game. Just a disgrace. It's a shame. I don't care who you root for. You hate seeing stuff like that. Some unbelievable stuff in the NFL today. Bill had an up close and personal view of one of them. And sadly, a lot of high school football careers ended this past Friday. Many more were extended as well, but we'll definitely touch on that. Where to start on a day like today, Bill Keenis? Before we get to any of that, though, let me just tell you, in about an hour, we have WJR's presentation of War of the Worlds. I was fortunate enough to take part of this a couple of years ago. I'm telling you, folks, this is not just lip service. It was a blast to be a part of, and it was even more fun to listen to it. We did it live, and then we had a special rebroadcast of it on a Halloween night. And Bill, I kid you not, I went out in my truck, sat in the driveway, and listened to it. You know, and kind of, all right, it's 1938. You know, I kind of went down that road. So we'll definitely check in with that next hour. Just a fantastic thing. But, Bill, let's start with Barry. I think some people might say overdue, whatever the case may be. They are going to put an 8-foot statue of the one and only Barry Sanders out in front of Ford Field. Applause, applause, applause. Definitely deserved.
Amen, Sean. And it's something I know the fans have wanted for decades, literally. You know, there was a lot of talk about it and when I was still with the Lions, and while it may have taken longer than a lot of us wanted, thank goodness it's getting done. And I think it's ironic that it's what's getting the reaction is it's 8 foot tall. They should make it 8 feet, 5 inches tall because Barry was 5 feet, 8 inches tall. But the one thing about Barry is when people said, well, he's small. No. Barry was never small. He was short, but he was never small. He was, thick, and he had legs that were like tree trunks. Can you imagine, Sean, how many pictures are going to be taken with fans next to that statue? And Barry, you made a point about his legend growing, or the affection toward him. Just, it seems like it's multiplied, and I think it goes back to his humility. How many times we see the photo or the video of him handing the official the ball after he scored. He was the most humble superstar, and I mean, I told you the story about when he waited in line at the Hard Rock Cafe in London. If you think I should tell it again, to me that capsulizes his humility and why people love the guy. I mean, it was the 93 preseason, and we're playing a preseason game against the Cowboys in London. We're staying at the Intercontinental Hotel. We were over there for a week, and this was actually the last of the original American Bowl series with preseason games, and it was also the last NFL game played in the old Wembley Stadium. So kind of historic on those fronts for sure. Well, as we were preparing for the trip, it was made aware to us that the London Hard Rock Cafe was on the next block, right around from the hotel. And back then, Sean, I'm not sure that it wasn't the only Hard Rock Cafe. And when you think of rock music, you think of the UK and the Beatles and the Stones and so on and so forth. And that was the place. If people revealed their bucket list back then, I'll bet you visit the London Hard Rock was on all of them because it was the place to be. So knowing that our travel party would want to take a visit, and the players and staff, what have you. We made an arrangement with the Hard Rock to have our group given immediate access, admittance, because we knew the lines were going to be forever. So everybody in our group had a pin, like a media pin that you're probably familiar with, but it was just a pin to signify you were part of the Alliance official party. And we told everyone wear it at all times, including the players, obviously not at practice, but whenever you're in public, at the hotel, wherever, make sure you're wearing that pin, because that identified you as a part of the party. The other benefit to wearing the pin was that if you had your pin on, you didn't have to wait in line for hours to get into the Hard Rock. Okay. So you could just go right to the front of the line and get admission into the venue. So I think it was the Friday before the game. We played the game on Sunday, and some of our beat writers, Killer, our dear friend Tom Kowalski, and Kurt Sylvester, Mike O'Hara, all those guys, they were going to the Hard Rock. Okay. They had their pins on. They were part of our traveling party. So what did they do? They turned the corner from the hotel, and the line is forever. Okay. It's as long as the eye can see, but they got their pin on. So they just start walking everybody, and they're probably strutting their stuff a little bit, singing some songs as they walk down the sidewalk. In the middle of the line, all by himself, is Barry Sanders. And they stop, and it's Barry. Hey, baby. They exchange greetings. Barry, not surprising, had his pin on. You know, he's doing what he's supposed to do. And so they quickly say, Barry, what are you waiting for? You don't have to wait in line. You got your pin on. Come on. Let's go. We can just head to the front of the line. We can get right in. And Barry looks at him and probably gives them a, okay. I'll just stay right here with everybody else. So he called them out, right? Their conscience was conflicted, right? I mean, I'll stay here with all the common people. I mean, he didn't say that, but, you know, the message. And they look at each other and basically said, okay, we'll see you, Barry. Yeah. We're going to the front of the line. But think about that. Think about that. At that time in the early 90s, he was as big a superstar as there was.
Yep.
He was massive. But his humility, the way his parents raised him, his values, all that stuff combined to make him such a unique person, human being, and superstar. I mean, it's just remarkable. So he probably waited in line another hour and a half. And I don't know that he even eventually made it in there. But there's so many stories like that about Barry. And, you know, from a football standpoint, you know, the one thing I like to say is, and you saw him, Sean, and those that did and had the up front view that we did, he was the only player that could go in two different directions at the same time. So not literally, but that's what the defenders saw. It's like they were seeing flashes of him going left and right, and, you know, that grab for something in the middle and whiff. But just remarkable. I mean, what a great player. And the beauty of YouTube and social media, digital media, the kids have such easy access,
yep,
to his greatness today. I mean, once a week during the football season, somebody's posting Barry Sanders' greatest runs, Barry Sanders this, that, the other. So the football fans of this generation and future generations are definitely going to benefit from the accessibility of his highlights that weren't always available when we were young. But thank goodness that the statue's going up, and that's probably, you know, in some ways, sadly, the highlight from today at Ford Field.
No doubt about that. We will get into that. Bill, I certainly want to get your thoughts. You've been around football. You've seen a lot of things. A disgusting scene. I mean, the visuals that came from the tunnel in Ann Arbor last night, they speak for themselves, and it's just gross. I mean, there's no other way to say that. You don't want to see that anywhere. You just don't. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. So much to get into. Want to go talk some high school stuff as well. Our Broncos gave it quite the shot. They really did.
Yes, they did.
Get some thoughts on that as well. Don't you go anywhere. It is Gridiron Wrap on a Sunday night. Don't forget War of the Worlds coming up at 8 o'clock. WJR's presentation of War of the Worlds coming up at 8 o'clock right here on 760 WJR. Bill, as you know, with this great game of football, oftentimes you think you know exactly how a game is going to go. And I'm here to tell you, at least from my vantage point, 99 times out of 100, I'm wrong. Last night in Ann Arbor was not one of those times. I thought that Michigan was going to grind Michigan State out. I thought that Michigan State was going to have to take some chances and connect on those chances to stay in the game and perhaps pull that upset. Didn't happen. Michigan grinded them out and come away with a convincing victory in that one. Before we get to the extracurricular activities, I think you were kind of on the same wavelength as I was.
Yeah.
That was one rare occasion where a game played out exactly the way I thought it would.
Yeah, it really did. And we've talked so much about the rivalry earlier this season and last season. And I still contend that when it comes to Michigan, Michigan State, Michigan State wants to beat Michigan more than anyone. There's no question. Michigan, in my opinion, Michigan State is the last team that Michigan wants to lose to. I think more so than even Ohio State. I could be wrong. That's just the impression this outsider who's been in the state for 30 years has. But I think the game did go as we expected it to. That was Michigan State's championship, Big Ten, State of Michigan, whatever you want to call it. This was their chance to redeem themselves somewhat. And they played really well early, really well. They stayed with them. Not surprisingly, they did take that chance down by the goal line, and they got stuffed. And you're thinking, ah, take the points. But I think the reality was Coach Tucker knew that they can't score. They can't kick field goals when they're in a position to score touchdowns.
Sure.
Because of Michigan, because of the team that Michigan is. And it played out pretty much the way we expected it. I know big deals being made out of, well, they kicked 5 field goals and they didn't score touchdowns. You know what? When you're putting points on the board on almost every series, that's success. You're taking time off the clock. You're keeping the opposition, the offense off the field, and you're keeping your defense fresh. Okay. Michigan, I think the game plan was ideal for Michigan. I really do. And I mean, I know it's hard to compare from week to week, but we saw what Michigan did to Penn State, you know, in the first half was a fluky. Penn State had 2 fluky plays that gave them 2 touchdowns. But Michigan dominated that team. Okay. I watched the Penn State Ohio State game yesterday. The score was not indicative of how close that game was. So I'm thinking, man, Michigan is really even perhaps better than we thought they were. So we'll see. But, you know, that was Michigan State's, you know, sort of last chance to really redeem itself, as I said, for this season. They played hard. They played gutsy. But they're just not the team that Michigan is.
You know, Bill, honest to goodness, in full disclosure, folks, Bill and I did not have this conversation. And resident Michigan fan Blake is sitting in studio here tonight. I think he's cringing to hear you say what you just said. And I tweeted out last week. I've seen Ohio State a couple times, and boy, when they turned it on, they can blow people out. Mm-hmm. Okay. The issue is if they have that lull against a team like mm-hmm. Michigan that can control the mm-hmm. clock, that can grind it out mm-hmm. with those road graders up front, if they dig themselves a hole, it's going to be just like last year. Didn't it seem like Ohio mm-hmm. State was just climbing uphill the entire game? And mm-hmm. I test right now, honestly, I'm not just saying this, and Blake is going to shake his fist at me for saying this. I think that Michigan's the best team in the conference right now. I really do. I think that Michigan's the best team in the conference right now.
I agree, Sean. If anybody argues that, we have pretty objective evidence to prove otherwise. And the beauty of Michigan, and we talked about it a few weeks ago, right? When you have a running game and you have a dominant offensive and defensive line, but certainly a dominant offensive line, that travels.
Yep.
That travels, because where the home crowd, where the horseshoe crowd could have an impact is when you need to pass the ball. Okay. That's where things get crazy, you know, with a home field advantage. But if you can run the ball like Michigan has, and you have those dominant O and D lines, I agree with you. I think I would not be a bit surprised if Michigan's favorite going into that game.
Nope. It, obviously, a lot of football to be played before then. We in the media have the luxury of looking ahead. I know none of those guys are looking ahead, but it's going to be really intriguing to see how that plays out. Bill, you've been around the game in a myriad of ways over the long and illustrious career that you've had. I don't care who you are. Your heart has to sink a little bit when you see some of the images and the videos that came out in the aftermath of Michigan's win last night.
Right. I agree, Sean. And I am not exonerating anybody here. Okay. I don't know enough about the particulars. I just know what I know. I've been in that tunnel. These are young men that are more highly charged emotionally, physically than we can even imagine. And you have one team that just had its heart broken and ripped in two. Okay. And that, in some respects, I'm going to say, was the, not the end of their season, but it was their last chance for glory, so to speak. And you had another team that was dominant. Okay. I mean, when you put those two, it's like two weather fronts. It's like the perfect storm, right? You have a cold front coming and a warm front coming. And when they smash, boom, you get lightning and thunder and all kind of crazy stuff. So I believe that after what happened at the Penn State game, and after what happened, sadly, and again, not exonerating anybody, I mean, there are standards that every collegiate athlete must uphold for his or her university, but they have to, in my opinion, they have to make some physical changes. They either have to make some physical changes, or they have to be overly, you know, sort of proactive about one team gets in and the door is shut, and the other team gets in and the door is shut. I mean, Sean, Ford Field has one tunnel. It's a lot bigger at the entrance, but you know, we thought of those realities. So we, you know, when we opened it, we made a very distinct, separate walkway for the visiting team. Okay. But, you know, their security holding the Lions back. They want the visiting team to exit first. There's protocol that can be established to prevent from that ever happening. And again, the emotion after a game like that is impossible to describe. It really is. And that's at any level, high school, college, the pros. That's why these athletes are what they are. They have a passion, they have a drive, they have an emotion. And what you don't want to do is create an opportunity or allow for an opportunity. Again, no exoneration here. It shouldn't happen, but I'd be shocked if there weren't some extreme changes moving forward.
Boy, Bill, I agree with you. Listen, and I'll use the same term. There is no exoneration. Young men have to be responsible for their actions, period. Period. End of story. And it, at least the way that Michigan State is talking, it sounds like there will be repercussions from this. But let's do everything we can to make sure that these young men aren't in that position as well.
Right.
They have to be accountable for what they did, and there's absolutely no excuse for what they did. But Bill, you know, I remember, don't ask me why you remember this, and I'm sure you'll remember this. You remember everything. Unfortunately, during the 0-16 season, a game late in the year, The Minnesota Vikings beat the Lions late in the game. I think it was like the week before Christmas or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember the Vikings were kind of in a celebratory mood, and the Lions were just devastated. And this is, they let everybody on the field, and I was down on the field that particular day and everything. And I just remember, okay, one team went one way, one team went the other way. There were a couple of, you know, bro hugs and stuff like that. But it was one of those things where you could, the Lions were so devastated. And I don't remember the exact particulars, but Minnesota won late. And, you know, it was one of those things where you could tell the Lion players were just decimated. They were sick of answering questions about 0-12 and 0-13 or 0-14, whatever the heck it was. And I remember being on the field at the end of the game going, boy, thank goodness these guys kind of have this planned out. I mean, there's a reason in the NFL, you know this better than anybody, you have a cooling period. You have a cool-off period. I mean, it just it's an emotional game. And you're talking about young people. Let's try to keep them separated as much as we humanly can.
Right. I mean, I don't want to suggest that college football is essentially like the NFL. But you brought up that Lions-Vikings game. And we talked about this in the past as well. What other profession do you have 17 opportunities to succeed? There isn't any. It's the NFL. You are preparing for Sunday. Okay. You either win or you lose. That's it. It's the beauty of it. Right. So with that reality, the emotion is ramped up exponentially for every game.
Yep.
Okay. You have 17 opportunities. Imagine any other business. Imagine a Ford dealer in Dearborn that is only open to sell cars 17 days a year. Think about how critical each of those days would be. It'd be off the charts. Imagine any profession. Okay. So that's what you've got in the NFL. In college, in a similar but different way, you can make the same analogy. Because these college kids, they're representing the whole university. They're representing their classmates, their teammates. They're walking on campus. They, you know, in last 2 years for Michigan State, hey, you know, it couldn't have been better. And now, boom, you know, boom, the reality is. So there is emotion that doesn't give you an excuse. And knowing what I know about Coach Tucker, no one's more upset at that behavior than him. I believe that because he's the type of coach that will not stand for that.
Yep.
So hopefully a combination of, you know, a focus, I mean, for it to happen, watch on in twice in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it's been. I don't think one time might be an aberration. Two potentially is not. Okay. So yep. I hope some things are done for everybody's sake, everybody involved.
Well stated. We got to go around the league, talk about what happened in the NFL, including the crazy game that you were a part of today. Talk some high school football as well. Don't forget War of the Worlds coming up at 8. I can see Mike Parsons milling around in the background as well. He and Rich Luzinski do a great job putting this together. If you love that old time radio, boy,
Yes, sir.
You are in for a treat tonight. Trust me when I say that. He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Bellegian. This is Gridiron Wrap on a Sunday night here on 760 WJR. I have a weird memory, Bill. You and I were just talking about this during the break. I remember a Monday night when I was a kid. It was 1983, and it was Halloween. And I remember it was a rainy night, and my buddies and I, of course, went trick-or-treating anyway. But we couldn't wait to get home to watch Washington, that great Washington team.
Green Bay.
And was it Green Bay? I don't remember.
Tell me what you remember from that game.
Was that the Lynn Dickey game?
Here's what
48-47.
It was the highest scoring game in NFL history. It was at Lambeau. Paul Kaufman, the tight end for the Packers, was incredible. Lynn Dickey, Theismann, Riggins, the fun bunch. It came down to a makeable Mark Mosley field goal of under 40 yards, and he missed it. He missed it. And that's how the Packers won. It was 48-47 or 40. Yeah,
it was. Yeah.
Because Washington that season, in the regular season, they were 14-2. They lost two games, the season opener to Dallas on a Monday night at RFK, 31-30, 1 point. And then at Lambeau, the game we're talking about, 48-47, 1 point. They lost two games by a total of 2 points. And then they get to the Super Bowl in Oakland, just throttled them. Or they were the LA Raiders, I think.
Yeah, they were. They
year.
Were.
Yeah, but yeah. The Raiders beat them. That was the Jack Squirek interception
right before half.
12 seconds to go in the first half.
Yeah. I still remember, Bill, everybody making a big deal because, you know, the war between Pete Rozelle and Al Davis
was
hot and heavy. And
yes,
everybody's like, what's going to happen when Mr. Rozelle has to hand that trophy to Mr. Davis? I mean, I still remember that plain as day. So it was funny because, Bill, you know, so many memories as kids for guys like you and I and so many of our listeners, you know, even for Halloween, it was like, okay, well, I got to get home to watch Monday Night Football.
No,
there's a dandy on tonight and everything. So a dandy tomorrow, Cincinnati, the Battle of Ohio, Cincinnati and Cleveland. Of course, a big one tonight with the Bills and the Packer. The Bills Mafia will be front and center. Just a reminder, I'm going to say this a lot in the next 22 minutes. That's how highly I endorse this War of the Worlds coming up on 760 WJR. Mike Parsons. Hi, Mike. And Rich Luzinski do a great job putting that together. Unfortunately, I couldn't be a part of it this year, but I've done it in the past. It's great. DJ Moore, how does a guy do what he did at the end of the game and find a way to get that open? And then, Bill, and then take that penalty. And in case people don't know what we're talking about, I'll let you fill in the blanks. I mean, it was an unbelievable finish to that game.
Right. Yeah, it was a back-and-forth game, Sean. I think there were 10 or 11 or 12 lead changes, back-and-forth, back-and-forth, back-and-forth. With just before the two-minute warning, with 3 minutes left in the game, Carolina scored to go ahead, 28-24. And then just before the two-minute warning, Damian Bird from the Falcons, you know, gets behind coverage and he ran most of the way. I mean, Mariota hit him with about a 20-25 yard pass, and he turned on the Jets and scored with 2 minutes to go to put the Falcons up. And you thought they had it. Then they added a field goal with 36 seconds left to go up by eight. Okay. To go up by six.
Yeah.
Okay. Carolina gets the ball back, and P.J. Walker, the Panthers quarterback, Sean, he threw the ball 70 yards. It wasn't a typical, you know, Aaron Rodgers versus the Lions on Thursday after Thanksgiving in 2015. It wasn't that. D.J. Moore got behind the coverage. The pass was incredible. And it just comes right into his hands. He catches the ball. Tie game, 34-34. He takes his helmet off and celebrates. Who? Sean, who were we just talking about? Barry Sanders. Maybe DJ Moore should have watched some more of Barry's highlights, right? And he's strutting around. Yeah, you made a great play. But the game isn't over yet. Okay? And every team has this in training camp. They go through all the rules all the time. And that rule, what was the game? It was a Cleveland linebacker a few years ago that cost his team the game.
Yep.
On the last play of the game, he takes his helmet off. They lost the game because of it. And I can't believe any head coach in the NFL doesn't drill that stuff. Because every head coach I've worked with, they did just that. They drilled that stuff. So he takes the helmet off, gets a 15-yard personal foul penalty. The extra point is now 48 yards. Eddie Pinheiro. God bless Eddie Pinheiro. Okay. And I'm thinking, you talk about pressure, 48 yards to win the game. Okay. To win the game. And he pulls it just left. Okay. So we go into overtime. Mariota throws a bomb on their first or second, or it was their first possession. The receiver doesn't high point the ball. It gets intercepted. The D-back for the Panthers returns it like 50 yards. They're in scoring position. They line up for another field goal. This one was 40-something maybe. Eddie Pinheiro.
Oh.
Missed it.
Poor
I felt
Eddie.
So bad for that guy. Oh. Yeah. And then on the next series, Mariota, who seconds earlier, thought he just cost his team the game, right, with the interception. They call an RPO, and he doesn't take it around the side. He goes up the middle for about 40, 45 yards. Now they're in field goal range, and they win the game with a field goal by Young Hoku. Just remarkable. Just remarkable. What a
phenomenal
game.
Phenomenal game. And you know what, Bill? Yep. The way you described it, it was funny because the Cowboys-Bears game had basically what happened is they showed the end of that game, you know, the so-called bonus coverage. And yeah. DJ Moore just kept running. He just kept running. And you can see, and you're like, okay, he's behind them. He's behind.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, he caught the ball. I mean, it was like, you know, one of those incredible endings. And I couldn't help but think of Dez Bryant because, as you well know, Dez Bryant taking off his helmet in that playoff game.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Officials
missed that one, Sean.
Yeah, they
did he take his helmet off. He walked out onto the field.
I didn't want to call that, but
The
amazing Seattle Seahawks knocked off the Giants tonight, 27-13. My jaw is literally on the floor, Bill. Yeah. I cannot believe Giants. Obviously, were off to a 6-1 start. The Seahawks were supposed to be one of the worst teams in the National Football League this year. Geno Smith, who I think to use the term journeyman would almost be disrespectful to journeyman out there. This is a guy that just hasn't been able to stick with many places after, being handed the job in New York, 10 years ago. Geno Smith continues to star. Kenneth Walker III continues to star. And we touched on it last week, but it bears repeating. The job that Pete Carroll has done is remarkable.
It really is. And they believe now, Sean.
Yeah.
They heard all the naysayers when Russell Wilson, went to the Broncos and through training camp and this, that, and the other. They believe now. And they're going to be a hard out for any team they play.
I think a lot of people are paying attention to what the Rams are doing, not only because our old friend Matthew Stafford is there, but because of that draft choice as well. The Rams fall to 3-4. Boy, the Niners look good, and you touched on it in the break, to go get Christian McCaffrey. Bill, you know the routine. If that guy can stay healthy, .. But, boy, what a dynamic he brings to that Niners club.
I mean, he's an albatross in so many ways. He's just so unusual. He throws for a touchdown pass today. He runs for one. He catches one. I think it was the first time since, 1970 somebody did that. It might have been. We were talking Monday night. Remember Joe Washington when he was with the Colts, had that great Monday night game where he scored touchdowns in three or four different ways. But, McCaffrey, the key is if he can stay healthy – but with that defense, I mean, I'm biased. We're biased when it comes to Matthew. I mean, he didn't have any time on 80% of his pass attempts. I swear. It was like he gets back to take the first read. And instead of reading the receiver, when you normally get to read first read, second read, go to the third if necessary, he's reading, Joey Bosa coming in to sack him. I mean, it was crazy. How dominant that 49er D-line is. And that D-line's coached by Chris Kocurek, who was with the Lions for a number of years. And you could see, I mean, Chris coached Ndamukong Suh and Kyle VandenBosch, Nick Fairley. So you knew Chris was a great D-line coach. and he's showing it now for sure.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We've got a shorter segment than usual so we can get to the WJR presentation of War of the Worlds coming up at 8. But when we come back, we need to talk the prep scene, a fantastic weekend of action. More to come as well. Don't you go anywhere. He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Bellegian. This is Gridiron Wrap on 760 WJR. Well, it was a fantastic weekend in high school football. I'll get to one that was near and dear to your heart. Nothing for our Holly Broncos to hang their head about. The game heard right here on 760 WJR. Cass Tech knocks off West Bloomfield at West Bloomfield, 38-13. They advance to take on Southfield A&T, a rematch of a game earlier this year, won by Southfield A&T, 58-56. That crazy game. Earlier in the season. But Bill, speaking of rematches, our Broncos got a chance to have a rematch with a very good Fenton team once again at Fenton. And Bill, I obviously didn't see it, but by all accounts gave Fenton everything they could handle before falling 29-26.
Yeah, it was, if you're a impartial observer, and saw that game, it was a great high school football game. And Fenton was obviously the favorite. We played them earlier in the year and they beat us 38-6. So 38-6. And they had beaten us 11 straight games, but the approach that the team took this year is it's not how you make the playoffs. It's if, and we were in, and what more could you want? You know, what's better than this? Where would you rather be than right here, right now? Thanks, Marv Levy. And the kids played that way. And we actually went ahead, Sean, with about 3.5 minutes to go. And I mean, I took my pulse. It was about 194 at the time. And I thought, what am I doing? Oh, but you just want to see those kids, you know, succeed because they're such great kids. But Fenton's a good football team. They earned it. Nothing fluky about it. It came down. We had, they went ahead and then we drove the ball, inside their 30, but got stopped on downs and, everyone associated with the program. I mean, it was gut wrenching. It was heartbreaking because it could have, would have been Holly's first ever playoff win. So you're on the cusp of history. But as I mentioned to my son last week, Billy, I said, just think your kids have a chance to make history. And being only the sixth team that ever made the playoffs is historic in some respects. But the thing that's always gotten me going back forever after the last game, and you see the tears of the seniors and the hugs, and I'm just full of chills right now because there's nothing more genuine, more beautiful than watching those kids. And as my son talked, the one thing he made a priority is just to look at each other and think of the bond, the lifetime bond that you've made during this season. And that's true. They have made a lifetime bond. They overcome a lot. They overcame a lot. Nothing was expected of them. But when you work together like they did, things are always possible. So it was quite a night.
Well, and it, you know what, Bill, as devastated as, you know, perhaps the sophomores and the juniors are on the team as well. This is a great learning experience.
No doubt.
You know, you bought into the system. You see that it can work and they're going to be the better for it. I know they don't want to hear that right now.
No,
but that's one of those life lessons looking ahead to next year. It'll be really fun to see.
No question, Sean. And that's the other thing he emphasized. He told the other classmen, take a look at these seniors. Their senior year, they get a new coach. Did they have to buy in? No, but they did. And the compliment there goes to their families, their well-grounded kids, to the school district, to the parents, to their teammates. But those kids bought in, and that's why it's so hard when you realize this is it. It's the last game. I mean, it's emotional. I mean, it's one of the most emotional things I've experienced over the years is to be close to a team, a high school team, and watch the last game, watch the last seconds tick off that clock and know for 90% of those kids, they're never putting a football uniform on again. It's special.
Well, we're pretty excited out here. You know, of course,
yes, you are.
Northville Catholic Central next week. We're a little excited about that. My daughter actually was like, "Dad, do you want to go to the game?" And honey, say that one more time, because, you know, normally she's with her friends and I'm totally cool with that and everything. But Northville and Catholic Central should be a dandy. Catholic Central with a big stand to win that game.
Yeah.
Bill, it's so, so special. This time of year is so special. And win or lose, these are memories for a lifetime. They really
are. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. No question.
Looking forward to it. Now, I heard a rumor. I was watching the broadcast on Bally's and listening to it, of course, here on 760 WJR. I heard a rumor that that might be the broadcast next Friday. So we'll wait and see.
Oh, wow. Would that be wonderful?
that Novi Detroit Catholic Central Northville game right here on 760 WJR next
That'd be
week.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, we'll definitely be listening for that. Of course, two more games to complete this week in the National Football League, the Packers and the Bills in Buffalo tonight. And then, of course, the Battle of Ohio, Halloween night, the Bengals and the Browns. So two darn good games before we're done with this week. No doubt about that. Don't forget War of the Worlds is coming up in about 5 minutes. I want to make sure to remind you all, if you didn't listen to it before, such a fantastic job. It really is. So,
Sean, I hope our listeners know the historical significance of War of the Worlds. What, 1938?
Yeah.
And people thought it was true.
Yeah.
It's, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
We got to get out of here Bill Keenest. And thank you, Blake. I'm Sean Bellegian. Until next week, take care.
Bye-bye.